Aye, Chairman.
It's all right, Mr. Hanaway, I'm supposed to forgive you. I'm nearly finished in your eyes. Okay, folks, I have apologies from Councillors Bailey, Clark, Kimmins, and Stokes. Are there any other apologies? Ballyhart.
Brown.
Councillor Devlin, Councillor Brown. Any other? Okay. Oh, and Big Henry, otherwise known as Councillor Riley. Okay, folks, I hope I didn't poison them over the weekend. But okay, you're very welcome here to. no comment. You're very welcome here to our health meeting, and as per always, I appreciate everybody giving up their time to come. Our first presentation today is from the Cooperation and Working Together, Cross-Border Health and Social Care, and we have Carmel and Bernie here. Carmel's going to do the presentation, and Bernie is here then to answer any questions. So we'll just get straight into it, if that's okay. Can we hand over, Carmel?
Okay, thank you very much, and good evening, everybody, and thank you very much for this opportunity to present to yourselves on our new programme of work that we're just embarking upon. So in terms just of a bit of background about COT, our Cooperation and Working Together, in terms of what we do, our vision is to realise opportunities and develop new ways to improve health and social care services for the well-being of people through collaboration across borders and boundaries. And in order to achieve that vision, we look at enabling services to be more accessible within the border areas. We innovate and pioneer new ways of delivering services, and we attract EU funding to support the development of these additional services based on the local need. Our partners, as you'll see in that slide, is the Western Health and Social Care Trust and the Southern Health and Social Care Trust, the Public Health Agency and the Health and Social Care Board, all based in Northern Ireland, and then the Health Service Executive in the south of Ireland. In terms of our new work programme under the EU Interreg 5A programme, we have had 5 successful project applications under the health and social care theme, and we have secured approximately €30 million of funding, and the projects are to be delivered by June 2022. So you'll see in that slide the 5 projects that we're going to go into a bit more detail on throughout the presentation. So that map, we refer to it as the Smarties map. It sort of gives you an idea of the wide ranging and the impact and reach of the services that we're hoping to achieve under those 5 projects. So for the first project, the Acute Hospital Services Project, the ultimate aim of the project is to create innovative cross-border approaches to the assessment and treatment of patients, which incorporate new technologies and patient pathways and enable optimum use of human, financial and physical resources across all 3 jurisdictions. I should have added, Scotland is also a partner in our project as well. And this will result in an increase in patients treated for specific specialties and the development of community paramedic hubs. And in order to deliver that, we have a number of deliverables within the project. First of all, to create 3 cross-border frameworks. The first one being the reform and modernisation of the management of unscheduled care, and that's for our community paramedics and our clinical decision unit, geriatrician-led service, and we're looking also at A&E reform. And then under our other two frameworks, 2 and 3, we are looking at the modernisation of outpatient services, and under Framework 3, we're then looking at the day case procedures around that, and we're looking at 3 certain specialties under vascular, urology and dermatology. And overall, we're hoping to treat 13,000 patients within these 3 frameworks and train 330 staff. And this is just giving you an overview of the various areas that we're looking to work on within the acute project. You'll see we have a number of community paramedics based in four areas there. In Area 2, there's some paramedics based in HSE Monaghan, and they may cross the border into counties of Armagh. We also have the Gerry Chilton-led service, ANE Reform, which is across all of the co-op partners and will reach into the Southern Trust area. We also have a development of a clinical decision unit in Daisy Hill, and may also capture Republic of Ireland patients also. We also have cardiac investigations and the three specialties under the scheduled care piece, the urology, vascular and dermatology. And then we're also looking at the interoperability of patient records as well. Our second project is the Innovation Recovery Project, and that's to establish a cross-border hub and spoke mental health recovery college network to support people recovering from episodes of mental ill health. And this project seeks to revolutionise mental health services by empowering people with lived experience of mental illness to pioneer education on self-management and recovery. So the project is hoping to adopt a social and educational approach to build upon clinical and therapeutic interventions. And the recovery ethos combines the expert knowledge of patients with the clinical skills of mental health practitioners. And working together, these groups will co-produce and co-deliver the diverse range of educational courses which the recovery colleges hope to deliver. Again, that's just an outline of the various deliverables within that project. 23.5 staff, 8,000 people supported and progressing individual recovery learning plans. And the locations are Area 1 will be in the west, Area 2 in the south, and Area 3 within the east, and that will cover Armagh, Newry, Louth, Belfast City and Dundalk. Okay, the next project, our third project, is the Multiple Adverse Childhood Experiences Project. Childhood experiences, both positive and negative, have a tremendous impact on future violence, victimisation and perpetration, and lifelong health and opportunity. And there's a raft of research worldwide on this, and as such, these early experiences are an important public health issue. Much of the foundational research in this area has been referred to as adverse childhood experiences. And the research has found that these adverse childhood experiences are linked to risky health behaviours, chronic health conditions, low life potential and early death. And as the number of ACEs increase, so does the risk for these outcomes. The wide-ranging health and social consequences of ACEs underscore the importance of preventing them before they happen. So it's all about early intervention. And the aim of this project is to transform the lives and opportunities of identified vulnerable families within the border area who are most at risk from multiple adversities in their lives, and by identifying, intervening early and providing nurturing support within their own home and communities, and building strong, self-sustaining, resilient communities. And in terms of the deliverables within this project, I should need to develop a questionnaire that a range of health and social care professionals and other areas like within the educational setting as well, public health nurses, midwives, in terms of using a questionnaire to identify where families are at risk of these adverse childhood experiences, and then to identify the most appropriate interventions to be delivered. In terms of our five hub areas, we have one based in Derry Letterkenny, the second one in Strabane, Anoma and West Donegal, the third in Fermanagh, Sligo, Leitrim, fourth in Portadown and Armagh and Monaghan and Cavan, and the fifth in Banbridge and Newry and Dundalk and Drogheda. And that's building on the existing infrastructure within these areas and working with the family the family hub structures within those areas. Okay, our fourth project is MPAR, and their lead partner there is NHS 24 in Scotland. COT is a project partner in this project, and the aim of this project is to enable older people to live well, safely and independently in their own homes. And it's also looking at the whole social prescribing model and also utilising e-health. And the deliverables within this project is to develop a shared framework for the identification, assessment and referral of patients identified as at risk, to deliver this to 2,500 patients. or to 2,500 clients supported to self-manage their health and wellbeing more effectively within the community, and to deliver 4,500 e-health interventions to support independent living. And in terms of our locations, you'll see the span across the both Northern Ireland and the south of Ireland and Scotland also, and I suppose the one most relevant is to yourselves would be in the Southern Trust area within Armagh and Uri, and we're working with a number of GPs within that area to identify the most suitable location for that. So that work is presently undergoing at the minute. And our final project is the Co-Think project, and this is the establishment of 8 health and wellbeing hubs in geographical areas targeting people most at risk of poor health and who generally make less use of health improvement services and are unlikely to act on their own to make sustainable changes to their lifestyle. And the focus is on early intervention and prevention by reducing the impact of risk factors in the development of long-term conditions. Again, we have Scottish partners involved in this as well, NHA, Dumfries and Galloway. And in terms of the deliverables within this project, as I said, 8 hub areas delivered to 10,000 beneficiaries to achieve positive health and wellbeing and the prevention of ill health, 40 health facilitators trained and support delivered in those 5 thematic areas under smoking cessation, physical activity, nutrition, alcohol misuse and mental health. And they're also looking at a 6th thematic area to increase health literacy. And in terms of the locations, you'll see there that there's a number of locations within, there's 3 within the Republic of Ireland and 3 within Northern Ireland, 1 based in Armagh, Dungannon area, and then we also have 2 hubs within Scotland as well. So in terms of the future for COT, our main aims are to ensure that these projects are successfully implemented and that we achieve all the deliverables that we're hoping to achieve. To evaluate and embed these EU-funded services and where appropriate, our main hope would be that this would be incorporated into core mainstream activities and also assist with removing and reducing barriers to the cross-border mobility of patients and professionals. We hope to play a positive and problem-solving role in relation to Brexit-related issues. We're also actively pursuing collaborative strategic alliances with various partners, and we also hope to contribute to engage with policymakers and other key stakeholders and engage in planning for any future EU funding and also carrying out our COT strategic plan. So we are at an exciting stage of the programme. We're just embarking on this programme, and we look forward to maybe coming back at a later stage and letting you know how these projects are progressing. So thank you very much for your time. I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Carmel. Bernie is going to answer any questions. Charlie, would you like
to... Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of things. You hear people on the radio most mornings now, there's an awful increase in drug abuse and drug taking, and people who are giving their own stories about their loved ones and how they've been adversely affected. And the common theme for them is drug rehabilitation centres. Do we have any in the north? I'm not aware now. They seem to think that there isn't proper service for people trying to recover from drug addiction. That's more often than it leads to taking their own lives.
Really, you know, we seem to deal with drug abuse and so on. Under our mental health services, really. So, you know, you will have people who are admitted maybe to the acute part of the mental health facility, if you like. But in terms of a big drug...
A bespoke centre, right? That's what they're all about.
No, not that I'm aware of, certainly in Northern Ireland. But I suppose our programmes here, whilst there's not a physical facility associated with them, under the Co-Think project, we do intend to address alcohol and drugs and provide support using voluntary and community sector mainly to actually reach out to those hard to reach groups. So it's only a small part of the project, but I suppose a very important part of it that we actually get into those communities, you know.
Yeah, so is there a plan? I know you said that people are directed into the mental health aspect of recovery. is there a plan? Because there's so much abuse now, even prescribed drugs. It's actually scary, you know, paracetamol and Lyrica and all those drugs. People are just totally out of it with them.
Well, suppose, Councillor, you know, from a statutory point of view, it would be the statutory agencies themselves who would actually address that. We are quite simply limited to the projects that we have secured funding to deliver on. So it's probably a question you might want to ask the broader statutory service rather than ourselves. But certainly last time around we did look at alcohol. And quite significantly look at alcohol, and I think we made some improvements, and as I say this time, to a lesser extent, alcohol and drugs. But, you know, I do appreciate that much more could...
Yeah, I raised it just to get your view on it, and
sure,
I appreciate
sure.
what you're saying. One other thing is recovery colleges. I mean, I've been speaking to a couple of people who have gone through that trauma of maybe trying to take their own life and had severe mental health issues, and they are very, very, very praiseworthy of the services provided by recovery colleges and how they can assist in a long-term recovery. Your diagram there showed Area 3 takes in Newry, Louth, Armagh and somewhere else. Is it possible to get that back up again, please? Their concerns were South Armagh, huge area of South Armagh. Is that, will that come under the Louth, Armagh, Newry, Louth?
Yeah, so Armagh and Newry, I suppose, from your particular perspective.
Yeah, these people who are from, actually from South Armagh, so either, is that it there or no? No, it's the next. Straight back from that, I think, again, that one, our area to the east. Dundalk, Belfast, Armagh, Newry and Louth.
Yeah.
So that incorporates South Armagh?
Yeah.
So is there a potential for one of the recovery colleges located somewhere in maybe Tullamore or some area of South Armagh?
Yeah, well, the project board are actually at this point in time selecting the areas. The one thing we don't want to do is have it almost connected to health facilities.
Right.
It actually works much better in places like, for example, colleges of further education. And
right.
It's quite simply the stigma that some people might feel if they have to go into a
mental health
facility. So certainly wherever it makes sense to do so, we do favour the colleges at this point in time, and they seem to be very receptive to allowing us to have our hub
Absolutely.
There.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, just wanted to get a perspective on it. Early appreciate that. Thanks,
Chair.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. Councillor Hurtig.
Hi, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. There was a lot of stuff in it, and glad to see so much stuff going on across the board that we are joining up services and that. Like it all makes common sense. I know you talked there. In earlier years when Cork were up and going, we could go to, in the Cross Midlands, South of my area, we could go to an out-of-hours doctor in Castle Blaney. I don't know whether that's still up and running or not, but I know a lot of people thought it very useful because we're only minutes from Castle Blaney. And I see talk of other services now where we'd be linked with the Dundalk, the Louth area. Would that be a change, or is that service still going in Castle Blaney, and will we still be able to avail of that?
Oh yeah, the GP out of our service, there were two pilots, one certainly in Castle Blaney, and the other one was the Donegal patients coming across into Derry, so they were mainstream. But unfortunately it didn't roll out. You know, our part of the project was delivered if you like, the mainstream funding picked up by the department. But I suppose what we would have liked to have seen is that I think there's about six or seven other places that you could have reasonably started a similar service, whether it be north to south or south to north. But that didn't roll out. But I'm pleased to say that, you know, certainly it has been sustained in the two pilot areas. But there's quite a number of things that have... our last programme was 12 different programme areas. And for your particular neck of the woods, for example, ENT was developed between Monaghan, Cavan, Monaghan, and Craigavon and Newry and Daisy Hill, and that's still going. And it means that the consultants, for example, in the Southern Trust area, actually crossed the border to do outpatients and day cases in Monaghan General Hospital, and then patients who need more complex surgeries, for example, come across to Daisy Hill or Craigavon, and that there has been sustained because the health service executive actually puts the money on an annual basis into the Southern Trust coffers. So
there's a bit
Councillor
Harvey.
Thank you, Chair. Carmel, some excellent projects there, I must admit, very impressed. Especially like your number three, your MACE one, working with the children, and also four, working with the elderly. Always in cases like yourself, just wondering how you are for finance and resources. Do you have adequate to do what you are needing, or do you feel, how do you feel that way? Thank you.
Okay. I think the projects are pretty well resourced. We have had to, in order to get this funding, do very detailed business cases and submit them to the European Commission. So we're very confident that they will actually cover what we say they will do. From the COT development point of view, we're actually mainstreamed. So, you know, the two services, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, actually employ us, if you like. So we're not dependent on EU funding. So any EU funding that comes, every penny is actually spent on that particular programme area. So we're very happy with the 30 million. I think we'll do quite a lot of work with it. Last time round we got 30 million, but it was 12 diverse projects, and we actually managed to see 52,000 patients and clients extra with that. So it goes a long way when you're doing, when you're working collaboratively and making the best use in the economies of scale that brings, you can actually seem to get more for your money than doing it back to back.
Thank you very much for that. Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Yeah, thanks very much for the presentation. I think five projects there that we skipped through very quickly that I'd like to read up a lot more on. One I do want to get a bit of clarity on is the community paramedics project. And I know the EU funding was 1.1 million for the 18 months on this, and you said that they want to start off with three or four pilot hubs, and we'll have a rapid response vehicle there. Now, just picked up on some of the warden when we were going through down slides, and we talked about Monaghan being the closest one from my area of South Armagh across the Lynn. And I think he actually said that the paramedics in Monaghan may cross the border in Armagh. I want a bit of clarity of the area that it does service there. I think cross-border collaboration and everything that this group does is excellent. But we've been saying for years in Crossmead End, waiting for an ambulance for 2 hours, say coming from Craigavon or whatever, that we should be working closely with our partners across the border, but especially Dundalk, which you can get to Dundalk in 10 minutes. Now, it is a bit disappointing that the one pilot hub to service the border area where I represent is going to be in Monaghan, which is, you know, further away from us. Is it restricted to the three pilot hubs with this 1.1 million, that it is the rapid response vehicles? Is it for just training community paramedics? Is it like maybe a bit more of a first responder scheme? Or what do these paramedics carry out? I know it's all about treatment in the home and trying to get people not to go to an ambulance to hospital. But is there any, going forward, any idea of working with places like Dundalk Hospital or an ambulance service in Dundalk? Or is this totally a separate project? So a wee bit more clarity around that, please.
Well, I suppose maybe just to explain the project a wee bit first, and then I'll maybe try and address your questions. There are there was funding for eight paramedics, two of them in the west coast of Scotland, very remote areas there, obviously in common with some of our own geography here. The two in Monaghan, there's two in Castlederg in County Tyrone, and there's two in Buncrana, North Donegal. And essentially what these are, at the minute, they are all advanced paramedics, so they're all practitioners in their own right. They have been through significant training, but what this project is hoping to do is actually train those paramedics. It's now been, we've secured more money actually just recently, and we will actually train all 8 paramedics up to masters in paramedicine level, which will leave them having the same status as an assistant physician. So they're very, very well trained, and they will be more independent in their assessment. So it's a good thing. Certainly, I take your point. We wish we had more money than the 8 that we have employed, but I suppose we work with the National Ambulance Service in the Republic of Ireland and also the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service to see where the best location might be, and I think the model, I suppose, the number of the remote area and the number of calls that were emanating from that area over the number of years, I think that's how they worked it out. But, you know, if they were needed, there is no reason why, you know, we're not saying you mustn't go outside Monaghan. We're encouraging them to come across into Armagh to hopefully support the mainstream ambulance service. And what they do, what makes them so unique is, you know, the main thing that you come into, say, A&E with are falls. That's the top 10, number one, I suppose, reason why an ambulance is called to a person's home. Now, the difference in these folk, and say the mainstream ambulance, they'll go out to the person's home, they'll do a full assessment, you know, for example, can you weight bear, can you stand, do you feel dizzy, and they will stay in that person's house until they feel absolutely happy that they can leave them there, or until a family member comes and actually takes over, and they will be saying as they go out the door, if you feel any way, you know, if they assess that you're able to stay there with a bit of pain relief or whatever, because they've got controls assurance, they work very definitely from very prescribed guidelines, they're in no way being cavalier about this, and they will say, I will actually come back, or an ambulance will come for you if you ring, you feel that you're deteriorating or you're feeling unwell, we'll send an ambulance out next time, it'll be the stretcher case, you know, the stretcher ambulance that will come out. So, you know, it's about having a wee bit more time, and even in these very early days, we can see in Scotland and Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland where in one day, there were, just to give you an example, in Scotland, in one day there were 15 calls, and of those 15 calls, only 3 people were brought into A&E, and were, you know, at the minute, in a lot of areas, the main, when you dial 999, the first thing will happen is you're going to be taken in to an already stretched A&E department. So it's almost putting another layer in where it makes sense to do so. But I can tell you from the early feedback that we've given people like Tony O'Brien, he came to the paramedic launch the other day, very sold on the notion of this being rolled out. So we need proof of concept. We need to prove that actually it is a good thing, and then hopefully then that idea. That's what happens in our work. If we can find a new way of working, a new model of working, then we hope that gets adopted into mainstream business.
Yeah, just.
But I'm
just
not sure if I answered. I know there were a number.
Yeah,
of
no, you did. Just to come back on one point. I suppose my question is the clarity of the area that they have to serve now. I understand, and Shane Hitton, that was here from the Ambulance Service at our last meeting 3 months ago, talked about doing a bit of work to find hubs, and that was talking about the north. And now, cross border, I know it's a bigger area, and a bigger rural area in Monaghan, and 2 paramedics, however well trained, that's a huge area for them to service.
Uh-huh.
So, is the area clearly defined? You know, we have people that are sitting in between all services inside Armagh that seem to be so far away from everything, and we're rolling out services with the Southern Health Trust. We're helping in the home, you're trying to get care in the home, and that's not available in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
So we always seem to be very, very far away from these hubs. And if me as a representative come back to the people to say, listen, there's another scheme that's set up, it's a pilot scheme.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping that it'll roll out after 2018 or 2019 when it's successful.
Mm-hmm.
But currently there's 2 paramedics in Monaghan with a rapid response vehicle, and they are servicing the area of South Armagh. Is that true? Do they have a clearly defined area? Because I know moving through the presentation there, it was stated that they may come across in Armagh.
Yeah.
So it's just what area did they have?
Their main area is Monaghan.
Is Monaghan.
Yeah, but I mean, we get money from the EU to do cross-border work.
Exactly, and that's my point.
There has to be an element of it. Now, whilst it won't be the totality of what they do, if and when they're needed in South Armagh, then we would be expecting them to go there as well.
So finally, just the last point, they will be connected with the ambulance services.
Yes.
Right,
the
ambulance
service calls
and if the response time is 2 hours from Craigavon and they're closer in Monaghan, that rapid response vehicle will be sent across the Mearn.
Sorry?
If the response time of an hour of that rapid response vehicle of 40 minutes from Monaghan, they will be able to be sent across the Mearn, and that line of communication will be walking right across the trust.
It's actually, they're controlled through the Northern Ireland and the Southern Ambulance Services control room, so they will, I mean, they're experts at working patches and where it makes sense for a vehicle to go, whether that's a mainstream ambulance or these two paramedics or these eight paramedics. So they will, first of all, the call itself will dictate if it's appropriate for that service and where it's appropriate, like I described, falls or you know, something of that nature, then they will be sent within their defined area. But it's mainly, I have to say, it's mainly Monaghan with some crossover when if it was a South Armagh call, and they're, I mean, they're in Castleblaney, so it's only minutes to get across the border to help there, and they have done and they will continue to do that.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Highland.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Thanks again also for your very interesting and I think positive presentation. Mine's a wee bit of a political question. You've referred to Brexit several times there and will be signed up with it apparently this time next year. So what do you think, what do you envisage as being the impact of Brexit on your programme on the lack of EU funding? Thanks.
I'm pleased to report that the Exchequer in the UK have underwritten the programme until 2022. So none of the programmes that we've described are compromised in any way. But as you know, the UK is a net contributor, so they will only be getting money back up until the date of Brexit, and thereafter then obviously the total cost for their element of the programme you know, has to come out from mainstream funding. So the programmes are fine. I don't know, nobody could possibly know what might happen beyond 2022. Now the European Commission are talking about, you know, some other funding programmes coming down the line, but how they'll look, I couldn't say. From our own point of view, we do a lot of mainstream work as well. We're not totally reliant on EU funding, although it's very, very good to get it. But we would do work such as All Ireland Emergency Planning. You know, we would have been involved, for example, in writing the business case for the radiotherapy centre in Derry. So we do a lot of cross-border work, like paediatric and general cardiac surgery and all of those things. So we're still going ahead and planning on the basis that the small population on the island of Ireland benefits in some cases from having joined up services, and we continue to work, you know, at a pace and trying to do those things. But from the programme point of view, we're quite happy that it's at least funded to 2022.
Okay, I don't see any other lights on. Carmel and Bernie, thank you very much for coming to talk to us tonight. It was very informative and beneficial. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you to swap places, or since we're finished, if you need to go on, it's up to yourselves. And could I maybe then ask the representatives, we're going to take all the other representatives. We have Roisin from the South Eastern Trust, we have Shane from the Southern Trust, and Ruth from the ambulance service. If we maybe ask them all just to come up, and we'll take the South Eastern Trust first, but rather than keep moving seats all night, we'll maybe just ask everybody to come up at the one time. And again, thank you very much, Carmen and Bernie, much appreciated. Okay. Yeah, just go ahead. You're okay. Ruth, sit down. Yeah. And Melanie. Sorry, I omitted to mention Melanie. Apologies, Melanie.
Okay, councillors, item 4 on the agenda is the presentation from the South Eastern Health and Social Care Trust. You will have received in your minute pad the questions that were forwarded to the Trust and the responses received. So we are going to hand over to Roisin to talk us through any of those. Has anyone any queries on the answers received or anything that they want to add from the South Eastern Trust? God bless you, you're very docile tonight. Roisin, have you maybe anything that you would like to raise with us while you're here?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the Council for the invitation to come along, as always, to meet and discuss some of the key issues that are happening in our local area in terms of health and wellbeing. I think hopefully this format does work well in terms of pulling together all of the queries from councillors, and it means then that I have had the opportunity as Director of Planning and Performance to liaise with my colleagues back in the South Eastern Trust and provide the responses that you have there before you. Most of those are in relation to both hospital and community services in the Downpatrick area. And there is really quite a breadth of responses. I mean, if you have any particular questions, I'm more than happy to respond to them. I suppose I could make just a couple of general comments. Maybe just to start off by saying that the Trust is continuing to ensure that one of our strategic priorities remains community planning, and working as a health partner, as a statutory partner, in partnership with the Newry Moreland Down District Council through the strategic partnership is extremely important to us, and we have, I think, developed better and more meaningful, you know, engagement arrangements and relationships with the strategic partnership and throughout the thematic groups, and also keen to make strengthen our relationships and engagement through the DEA groups across the council area. So that, I think, has been really positive since the last time we met, and I know that we are jointly pursuing, and I think this council is leading the way in terms of looking at the possibility of joining up the participatory budget model for community planning, and all of us who have a stake and a role to play coming together to share, even on a small scale, to start off some area, some of the pilot projects in the local communities to help health and wellbeing. And, you know, to me, there's a real opportunity there in how we can possibly scale and spread that. Another key area for the Trust at this moment in time, alongside community planning, is you will be aware of the supply and confidence arrangement, which has delivered additional £100 million for health service, health and social care transformation across 18-19, and then hopefully another £100 million in 19-20. So really working in partnership across all the trusts with the Health and Social Care Board and the Public Health Agency, we are busy now looking at how that investment might best be put to use, and some of the priorities that we have wanted to do in terms of service reconfiguration, taking forward the Bengal report, etc., and really working together on a regional approach for transformation. This will offer us a really an umbrella and a way forward in which we can do that. So there's lots going on at the moment in terms of what new services we can get up and going in 18-19, and those are really across all programmes of care in hospital and also equally, if not greater, within the community in terms of increasing community capacity, additional and new services for mental health. We've also heard just from the recent presentation from COT how, again, health can contribute through the ACEs and signs of safety for our children and their looked after children, and also how we can improve the adult social care model across Northern Ireland and the domiciliary care services. Also importantly for us within that, there's £30 million has been allocated for elective care, and you will all be very well aware in terms of representation of one of the greatest concerns to our local community is the unacceptably long waiting lists for both outpatient, inpatient and day case treatment. So this money will go some way to addressing that, and that's, you know, that's to be welcomed, and we're all working within our own trusts to be able to try and provide as much additional capacity as we possibly can. So that, alongside some of the other, what they're really enablers, will be, you know, the commitment to the term co-production, or, you know, working in partnership and engagement. And again, I think that the council and the Health and Social Care Trust, you know, we have a really important role to play in that, and to be able to have the conversations with the people who are using our services. So that's the general points. I'll not go through any of the queries unless someone would like to bring them up with me. I do have one general point that I would like to refer to again in terms of good communication with the council, and I would always keep you up to date with what's happening in terms of the Down hospital model. And we know that there are two levels to looking at the sort of future hospital model for services across Northern Ireland, and that there's been, and this council you will be very well aware of, the regional process through the Daisy Hill Pathfinder. And again, some councillors did ask me the question, are there lessons to be learned? And there absolutely will, through that regional process that has been adopted. And then for us in the South Eastern Trust, at local level, you know, we operate very much a networked hospital model, with the Ulster Hospital as the acute, but very ably supported by the Lagan Valley, Down, Ards and Bangor local hospitals. What's currently happening in the Down hospital, some local councillors from the Down area particularly, you may be aware that one of our very long-term consultant positions will be retiring this summer, and that will mean that the consultant medical complement within the Down, we will leave with one permanent consultant and two long-term locum consultants. So I just wanted to again make sure that you're aware of that, and for me to share with you what the Trust is doing to try and ensure that we have a sustainable model going forward. So we continue to try to recruit into consultant medical positions within the Down Hospital. It is challenging, and we have tried to recruit several times and often have not had applicants. Our current efforts, we are currently out to advertisement for a consultant geriatrician, and we have just got approval in the last week to proceed with an advertisement for a consultant position. So we will see what comes forward from that recruitment exercise, and hopefully we will have interest. The model continues to be extremely stretched within the Down. However, it is networked to the Ulster Hospital and is supported by the consultant medical team who already come and provide overnight cover, etc., in the Rota. And we're now planning to provide a second consultant cover, including a presence during the day. So that's the position as it is today, and I will always make sure to keep the council well informed if there are any changes that might arise from that. The most important thing again for me is in terms of very good and open communication, and that we are keen to meet with the council and wider stakeholders as we move forward to ensure that we do provide an appropriate and sustainable model in the future across the Down. There is a lot of really good work happening in the Down, and again, the council I know often do send feedback in terms of, you know, the care that our staff are providing, and that is very much appreciated and shared with staff. But there's lots of new services happening in terms of outpatients, and the Down Hospital will be the southeastern site for ophthalmology services, which is excellent, and we'll be taking that service over from the Belfast Trust, and it will be based here in the Down Hospital. We're also keen really to maximise all opportunities for increasing our day case work within the Down as well, because we have capacity, and then there's a regional programme for that. So lots going on. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that, Roisin. Councillor Traynor.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Roisin, for coming down and meeting us tonight. I suppose a couple of questions, and I'll make them as brief as possible because I know there'll be others who will want to get in. The first one is around the transformation of care. So you're outlining that there's 100 million for the financial year 18 and 19, and then a further hopeful 100 million then the year after. My first question is with regard to Bengoa, how far is 200 million going to take us in the transformation of healthcare across the whole of the North? That's the first thing, because as we've all seen from Bengoa, it's in a very extensive document which outlines the idea of bringing towards regional centres for excellence. that'll lead me on to the second point then with the mental health services then, that the questions put to the Downshire side. You know, I understand that we're moving away from, you know, institution based and we're moving into community based. However, under Bangoa again, we're going for this idea of having regional centres for excellence. Have there been any talks around where the situation of such a centre for excellence for mental health would be within the north? Are the South Eastern Trust going to vie for having it in this area? And if so, again, I'm plugging it here, Downshire is a historic site whenever it comes to a centre of excellence for mental health. We had the training college here on the Downshire premises, so it's just plugging that as well. The third one is around access to facilities, and I understand again that what you're saying about community transport and the idea with leases. The thing that I would be asking is, have the Trust been working with the likes of TransLink in order to try and get direct links from Downpatrick to Dundonald? Because, as you say, you have a very extensive network ranging from Downpatrick to Dundonald. The problem is, how do people access that network? You know, and without the, you know, if there's no public transport there and if there's a high need, does that mean that you have to enter into talks with, you know, establish the fact that there is a need and that the service should be provided? And does that mean that the Trust will, for instance, put money forward for such a service? You know, because the big problem for us here in this area is we are a hub town, which is linked with a lot of rural villages and other towns that can come into here then to travel on. There's no direct link with Dundonald at the minute. At the minute, there's a transfer service, I'm aware, via the park and ride, goes to Cairns Hill. But, you know, that wouldn't be maybe seen as a regular service for many people who are attending appointments in Dundonald or who have to visit in Dundonald. But, you know, so it's just, that's the sort of questions I would have. Sorry, I don't know, if kind of taking a lot there. I'm giving you a lot to maybe respond on, sorry.
Roisin, do you want to respond?
Yes, Councillor Trainor, thank you. I suppose, I mean, it's a question that there wouldn't be a straight black and white answer. How far will the money go? I suppose in health we're really appreciative to be allocated the funding to be able to take forward the next stage of the transformation. I think there also is a pragmatic approach to how much can we actually do within 1 year and can we actually spend the money that's been allocated to us. So, for me, in the world that I'm working in, there haven't been any challenges back about the level of funding. It's really about, you know, what are the priorities in service, where is the money best directed at, and then thirdly, we're now looking at what is actually deliverable, what is actually possible, what can we actually do. What I can reassure you on is there is a really good spread, so it is the providers of services that have influenced where the funding should be spent and where we feel it will have the greatest impact. Because it's not about really what we put in, it's about what do we feel will produce the best clinical and well-being outcomes for our population. So across the transformation piece for allocation of spend, there's funding allocated, as I've mentioned, to things like elective waiting lists, building capacity, so building capacity within our communities and healthcare and health prevention, strengthening our hospital and communities model, and also specific funding allocated across the children's and social care programmes and mental health. So, you know, I'm confident that there is the spread there, that and there is the right spread. The expectation from the Bangoa report, though, that this will allow us to take forward some of the service reconfiguration that we have needed to do for some time, and therefore we will that will be able to pump prime that and be able to continue to sustain those services. However, being very realistic, we are not expecting, you know, to have cash releasing savings from the work that we're taking forward. Just in the meeting with the Southern Trust today in relation to that, because the pressure and the need for services will continue to be there and grow, so we're very aware of that. So hopefully that goes some way to say, you know, in a way there is no view for how much we can actually take within 1 year, but I think it is going to be challenging even to spend the money within this year in terms of the transformation. We need to provide an assurance that the proposals being put forward are actually transformative, and that's where we're at this moment in time. But there is an absolute commitment from health and social care to really do the best we possibly can with the funding being allocated, and it will be important that all of the money allocated will be spent. You mentioned there about mental health inpatients, and I would refer you, rather than talk for too long, about the response to question one, Councillor Trainor, in terms of mental health services at the Downshire site. And what I have included towards the end of that is an update in terms of the proposals. certainly whenever you said about a Centre for Excellence, the recommendations coming forward from the Bamford report was that each of the five provider health and social care trusts in Northern Ireland would all have a single mental health inpatient unit. So rather, it wouldn't be one for the region, but each trust would be planning to have one, and that is the current direction of travel. And the South Eastern Trust have put in a business case to be able to take that forward. The preferred option for that location would be on the Ulster Hospital site because of the acute nature of it. Now, whenever you talk about mental health inpatient, mental health services, inpatients are only a small part of that in terms of the acute inpatients. And you will be very well aware that really the emphasis is on building capacity within communities, and that it is a good thing that we've moved away from the long stay institutional wards within the Downshire Hospital, and we have been able to provide a number of new mental health accommodation schemes, not only across the Downpatrick area, but right across the trust areas, and this is really the right thing to do in terms of supporting people who no longer need to live in institutions. And also the investment is being used to support things like have already been mentioned earlier on, the Recovery College, and other services such as cognitive behavioural therapy and commitment to a Centre for Excellence for Addictions, which we do have here in the Downshire site. So the Downshire site, stroke the Down Hospital, plays a very strong role in terms of mental health services across the South Eastern area and will continue to do so. In relation to the TransLink, we have had communication over many, many years, probably about 8 years, in relation to transport between Downpatrick and the Ulster Hospital. And to my knowledge, there hasn't been anything really to come out of that. We're not sure. I think there was a survey at one point. It's difficult to actually articulate the need and the volume of people that would actually take up such a service. That's my understanding. But we would say that, you know, we continue to be open to have conversations with TransLink should there be the need for it. And I think that it is quite difficult in terms of the volumes, but appreciate and we do appreciate accessibility. The roads and the infrastructure are not great between Downpatrick and the Ulster Hospital. So we do provide services locally where possible. And if we need to make special arrangements, then we try and do that. We have, I think it's over 20 visiting consultants from the Ulster to the Down every single week.
Okay, thank you for that, Roisin. Councillor Sharvin.
Thank you very much. And hello, Roisin. So first of all, we'll tackle the consultants part, which is extremely concerning to hear. And I was aware. And it will be interesting to see what applications we do get. If we don't get any, it would be interesting to speak to doctors to understand exactly why they're not applying and what we can do together to actually get the vacancies filled. Couple of points that I want to raise was the assessment and diagnostic services, including an MRI service. So I know from speaking to the chief executive of the trust, the business case and scope has been submitted, but it hasn't progressed any further. And I was wondering if there's any traction on that. And then in comparison of December 16 and December 2017, there was a slight increase in the number of 12-hour performance and the intake of patients being seen within 12 hours. And so we're understanding what we plan to do to tackle that increase there. The third one is around the Four Seasons Healthcare, which the Trust has partnered up with providing a nursing home facility in Downpatrick for people with serious mental health illness. And I sort of understand what is the uptake and what is the process for admissions to that. Is it through the typical referrals of the doctor, or is there a particular one? And if you don't have the answer now, Roisin, I'm happy for you to take it away. And then in one other point was around support for local organisations through the self-harm intervention programme that the Trust has. How do groups get involved in that to actually have a contract with the Trust to provide a service? Because there are some organisations within the Downpatrick area that don't have that contract with the Trust, but they are providing such services to the community, and if they can get that sort of guidance and support from the trust to expand even further, that would be great. That's everything at the moment.
Okay. Roisin, do you want to come back on those questions that you can answer at the minute?
Yes. Thank you, Councillor Sharvin, and I will come back on some of them. I note the points that you've made in relation to the consultants. In relation to the MRI, the Health and Social Care Board have not commissioned us to provide MRI services of the Downs. However, you know, we do provide all the other diagnostic services of the Down, and should there will be an opportunity to have that service commissioned, we would be quite happy to provide it. It's something that we do keep on the radar, see where we are with that. The point you made regarding 12 hours, I'm not sure if you actually meant the number of patients who are breaching 12 hours waiting, or if you actually meant through the queries the number of patients who are actually coming to the emergency department during the 12 hours that it's open.
No, so it's those that are breaching the 12-hour wait.
So there's two sides. One is we're having more patients coming through the Down during the 12-hour period that the emergency department is open now than we did have some years ago when it was open for 24 hours. So that is excellent in terms of patient flow and providing services locally, and also the range of models that are available. So we've, as you know, within the last year, we've just opened the frail elderly assessments service, and we're really hoping through this transformation funding to be able to expand that and right across the trust area. It's working so well, and it's really important for older people to be able to access multidisciplinary opinion quickly. The patients who are breaching 12 hours is quite simply, and it's happening across all our three main sites of Lydon Valley, Down, the Ulster, as a result of increasing attendances and pressures on emergency department admissions, and the pressure on our inpatient bed capacity, which is absolutely maximised within the Down. Mm. So really what we, again, the transformation is a vehicle to try and alleviate that by providing alternatives to hospital admission, preventing inpatient admission where that's possible, and provide more ambulatory care so that patients will not have to breach the 12 hours to the same extent. Do I think it would still be a challenge, an issue, particularly within the Ulster Hospital? Absolutely yes. This is not going to go away quickly, in my view.
Okay.
And you mentioned then, but I will get back to you, particularly on the specific question regarding the Four Seasons Nursing Home and self-harm intervention programme. Yes, that's important. And if you just ask the person to contact Julie Davidson, who's our contract manager, she will be able to point them in the right direction with the guidance.
Alright, thank you very much, Roisin.
Okay, Councillor Andrews.
Thanks very much, Chair. Roisin, thanks for your presentation so far. Just two or three pointers. So, I was just wondering, would there be any plans to doctors being ascended down to the Down Hospital on a permanent basis, you know, such as contractual issues, you know, like the BMA, whatever, could that be arranged that those doctors be ascended permanently? Also, in relation to the Ulster Hospital, you know, you've been well aware of trolley weights, you know, and the pressure on beds in the Ulster Hospital, and then with ambulances being tied up as a result, you know, and in relation to post, you know, recuperation, could patients not be sent back to the Down Hospital to recuperate, thus opening up closed wards and ensure that the hospital is operating to full capacity? And, you know, Councillor Traynor, he touched on the subject of mental health, and I'm just wondering, will there be more financial resources to be put into the mental health services, for example, staffing and help? Could resources be given to help provide services to so many who are in need of those services as speedily as possible? Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Roisin.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Yes, I'll run through those. Absolutely. When the posts are advertised for consultants in the Down Hospital, they are on the basis being allocated permanently to the Down. So that is our intention. And, you know, we'll be hopeful of some people who would choose to work there. So it's not only that. So it's not, you know, all or nothing. But there is also then the opportunity for the networked arrangement where we do require all of our consultants to rotate, for example, between the Ulster and Lagan Valley and the Ulster and Down. So absolutely. Pressure on beds is not only in the Ulster, but it's across all three sites. So so it's not that there are beds sitting empty in the Down Hospital. We do, you know, whenever you're saying our patients return to their local hospital, absolutely yes. Not only for the reason of, you know, pressure on beds, but because it's the right thing to do. So once someone is medically fit enough to return closer to where they live, then we do that every single day. We have patients repatriated to the Down Hospital. And as you know, we have 44 general medical beds, and the bed occupancy is very close to 100%. And in addition to those 44, we have also got 45 mental health stroke dementia beds in the lower ground. So you're really just you're sharing with us something that is good practice and that we do our absolute best to do. And then in terms of mental health, yes, within the transformation funding, we've talked about £10 million of that 100 is going to be allocated to investment within a range of mental health services.
Okay, councillors, I don't see any other questions for Roisin, so I will move on to the presentation from the Southern Trust, and we have Shane and Melanie here. So, Shane, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Much like Roisin, I'm not proposing to walk through the responses, although happy to take any questions from any on any areas. I also would not wish to go back over the stuff that Roisin has already discussed, although I think there are some important things specific to the Southern Trust that are actually worth mentioning. All of the transformation work that Roisin has mentioned earlier, and in particular our focus on the transformation of Daisy Hill Hospital, and people will be very well aware of the Pathfinder process. The Pathfinder process was an engagement with the community and with the board and the department and professionals to try to build a model for what emergency care in Daisy Hill Hospital should become. We are very far down that path now, which is great. I would expect in the next couple of days to be able to formally make an announcement about moving forward, which would be great. And this particular model is looking at a new model of emergency care, a new model of direct assessment, so helping people to avoid coming to emergency care, actually getting straight into wards, etc. And quite a big program for the next 2 to 3 years of changing the way the hospital works. So we've been through internal presentations, we've been to the Health and Social Care Board, we've been to the Department of Health, and I would expect quite soon there'll be a very positive outcome to that, which would be great. It's very clear from the analysis, the area that the hospital cover has huge growth in elderly patients, has huge growth in childbirth and actually young people as well. So a population that is growing, demands are growing, and therefore I think it will be a very good investment in Daisy Hill for the population. So I look forward to that moving forward, and as I say, we've done a lot of work to get it to that point, and would hope in the next couple of days to be able to formally announce what is happening there. And that's fabulous. On top of that, then, we have a series of investments, much like the transformation agenda that Roisin has mentioned, around mental health, around ambulatory care, elective care in terms of reducing waiting lists, etc. So there's a considerable positive thing going on at the moment, which is great. To take the point earlier from Councillor Trainor, I take the point 100 million this year, 100 million next year. Doesn't seem like a huge amount of money on a £5.2 billion health service, but actually it's very much welcomed, because I think we can do good things with the money to really start driving reform, particularly the mental health side of the house, but also ambulatory care as well. So it's a very welcome set of investments. And also, you also asked about transport as part of our response as well. I think this is one that, from a personal perspective, I think is perfect for the community planning agenda. You know, if we're genuinely into community planning, then it is TransLink, it is the Health Trust, it is the community, it is the council trying to look at how can we best serve our population with transport, because this is not an easily solved issue, and I wonder whether collectively we can do something, including TransLink, to see what we can do about appropriate public transport. So, you know, I don't think it is a health agenda, and it's not a transport agenda, it's not a council, it's something that we all need to think about how we come together to provide the appropriate public service. So, as I say, exciting times now with Daisy Hill Pathfinder kicking off. We have obviously answered all the questions that are in your pack, and I'm more than happy to respond to any of those questions that you would like me to respond to.
Okay, Councillor Casey.
Thanks, Chair.
There's some suggestion that, the current CT scanner in place in Daisy Hill could be coming at a critical phase or stage of its lifespan. I don't know how true that is, and I don't know the lifespan of a CT scanner, but because it's such a well-used and very important piece of apparatus, is there any ring-fence funding to provide in the event of something happening to the current scanner, replacing it with a state-of-the-art new scanner?
In terms of the scanner in Daisy Hill, the scanner in Daisy Hill, I'm led to believe, is just about 7 years old, which, in terms of scanners, is coming towards the end of its best use of life. So you're correct that there is some truth in the rumour that the scanner itself is not as good as it could be. Couple of things. First of all, there is a capital replacement programme. We've put that as part of the bid, and we would like to replace that because ultimately we want to make sure our equipment is good. There is an issue that we need to look at with regards to electricity, believe it or not. So there's an issue on the site that we need to solve with electricity before we can bring any further equipment on board, and we just released a considerable amount of money to do that. So we do want to replace it. We do want to be part of the capital plan. It is working. It's not that it's breaking every day of the week. It does work. It works very hard. But yes, it's part of the routine replacement, and it is about 7 years old at the moment, so therefore it is in and around the time frame where you would start to replace it.
Is there anything this council can do to try and fast? You say there's an issue with the electricity, or is there anything we can do to fast track that or help you along the way?
Thank you for the offer. No, we've actually secured the money. It's about low voltage electricity. I'm not an electrician, so I don't know the great details of it. It's about our low voltage electricity on site. We've secured the money, and we'll be engaging with people to be able to do that. In terms of the wider scale, the actual replacement of the scanner, it's a considerable capital investment that we have with the Department of Health. So again, I'm not too sure there's anything other than us lobbying the Department of Health, but it's in the queue, and it's one that we hopefully can replace.
Okay. Thanks to that, Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. One question that we'd raised at the meeting in February, and I don't see it here on the responses, was the rollout of the acute care at home. And I know the pilot program was launched a couple of years ago and highly successful. It's something that I had said at that meeting, which I would have liked my family to be able to avail of it at the time. And I see where it was rolled out, I think it's the second phase of it. And it still doesn't get as far as the areas that need it the most. And we're talking about rolling it out from the centre of the hospital, so the people closest to the hospital is where the first phase was rolled out, correct me if I'm wrong. And, you know, a point that was brought up so many times, you know, and I make no apology to be, I know there's bigger issues, but I know, you know, right across, we've to look at the whole country, but I make no apology for being parochial, because even with the last discussion, we were talking about ambulance hubs, they always, the area that's shouting the most, you know, the farthest away in response times, the farthest away in getting the hospitals, are always the ones that's left to the very end. You'll get it when everybody else gets it. And that's sort of the response that we get. I know that might sound cutting, but especially on something, a package like that, for rural people to get to the hospital, and just say, for example, in Cross Midlen, they're further away. So they, you know, and I made the point of my grandfather would have loved to avail of a care at home package. What is the plans of rolling out to the rural areas in South Armagh in the future?
I'll pass you to Melanie, because Melanie has direct responsibility for that, sir.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Councillor Burns. We're very proud of the acute care at home service, and you're right. We have been slower in some of our more rural areas, and we actually have had a plan up until the end of March to now get completely trust-wide. So that was actually phase three.
Yeah.
So by the end of March, we were expected to have rolled right out to South Armagh and South Down and to the last remaining nursing homes in that area, and also in Kilher Valley at the other end of the trust. We're almost there. We are still short on South Down a bit, and that's really been because of inability to recruit the medical cover that we needed for the acute care at home, because it is the alternative to an acute stay in hospital, so we need to make sure it's safe. We have been working with local medics to help us along that journey, but we really want to get a stabilised workforce to make sure that we're rolling safely. And we're also currently working with our GP colleagues, because a lot of the GPs are interested in being part of the medical input into the acute care at home team. And where that has happened in some of the other areas within the trust, we have shown that not only does it benefit the availability of acute care at home in the community. It's also improving the GP's practice because they're learning a lot from that experience. So in short, we're almost there, and very shortly we should have full coverage right across your Aidan Mourne area. What I will say we're struggling slightly with at the minute is building confidence within our primary care colleagues to see this as an alternative to going to the hospital, and we're trying to work at the minute to bring our GPs on board to make sure that if they pick up somebody who is unwell, that they have that direct interface with our acute care at home consultant so that we can mobilise that service if we can get the appropriate time.
Yeah, so just to be clear, phase 3 is district wide and we're hoping in the weeks.
Yep. And was really on target for the end of March, but it's really been the recruitment has been our delay, but it is fully funded for the whole area now.
I'm delighted to hear that. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Highland.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I see there during the week, or a couple of weeks ago, when David Davis was over, he went to Middletown to the All Ireland Centre for Autism. And I remember years, it seems a long, long time ago, going to the official opening of that centre when Barry Gardner was the Secretary of State for the North. I'm just wondering, I mean, what has happened there? Because I have an autistic grandchild of 10, and I was asking his parents, have you ever had any contact with that centre? And has that centre ever contacted you to try to help your child with the problems that he has? So it's just a general question. Brought before because of David Davis appearing unannounced as he did.
And if you shed any light on that, or is it something you should need to look at?
I can't, but I will certainly look at it and get a response back to the council. So apologies, I wouldn't know the answer to that, but I can certainly let Melanie know.
Can't add anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
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 At a personal level, I don't, and therefore I apologize, but I can certainly speak to my directors of that service to find out, and I will respond back to the council.
Okay, Councillor Highland, I know it's not what you want to hear, but it's the best. We want to get the right answer. So, okay, Councillor Savage.
Yes, Chair. Sure, just really following on and congratulate the work that's been done on the Pathfinder group. I'm looking forward to hear what's going to come out of that, and hopefully it will be positive. Just really two staffing issues, really. The first one, having been in Daisy Hill myself and witnessed it firsthand, the great care of our nursing staff there. I did have conversations with them, and I think that they go way beyond the call of duty in relation to delivering a first-class health service in our locality. We talked there about the discrepancies in relation to the salaries in Northern Ireland and GB, for example, in England. But I get the distinct impression that we are struggling to attract nurses. How big a problem is it? How short are we in nurses? And secondly, you know, what sort of a challenge will Brexit bring forward in relation to being able to attract nurses? That's the first element I would like an answer on. The second one's in relation to the domiciliary care package and trying to get staff. I know we discussed this at the last meeting about the difficulties we had and the turnover of staff on an ongoing basis. Just really get an update on. We talked about sort of upscaling the salaries and that, and trying to make that role more attractive. And sort of maybe Melanie would know what sort of steps and how successful that has been, because I know that's going to be vital going forward in relation to delivering good quality health care in the community. So it's just really those two staffing aspects. Thank you.
Okay, Melanie.
Thank you, Councillor Savage. And firstly, I would agree totally with you. Our staff have been absolutely tremendous throughout the winter period in particular, where they were working every hour God sends to actually deliver a service in the face of increasing demand and flu and all the other pressures. The picture from the Royal College of Nursing in their latest press release, there are 11,500 nurse shortages in Northern Ireland. 11,500. It's big, 10% of the... Sorry, I've misread that wrong. It's 1,500. It's still 10% of the nursing workforce in Northern Ireland, which is a big hit for all of us. The pay discrepancies, as obviously we're sitting within the agenda for change terms and conditions, the trust, so it's not something that we can directly do anything with, but we are challenged by the current consultation in England around a 6.5% pay increase over the next 3 years, and that would be a challenge for us in terms of recruiting and retaining staff for Northern Ireland. We're obviously working closely with Department of Finance, who are responsible for the public pay policy, and also with RCN and anybody who can lobby on behalf and try to influence some of the... Well, obviously, we're missing here politically in terms of our assembly and our political influence and all of the other bits, so we really will need that on board. I can't give you the exact figures for Southern Trust in particular, but I know we are definitely short of nursing staff. But we're definitely not the worst picture in Northern Ireland.
We can get those figures for you, Councillor.
Domiciliary care is a capacity issue that we struggle with really in both sectors, not just in the private sector. So within Southern area, we deliver about 40% of the domiciliary care ourselves, and the other 60% we commission from the independent sector. There have been issues with workforce, and I think a lot of the work that has gone behind that is about actually valuing our social care workforce and trying to get a career pathway that attracts people in who want to work in social care, and it's an attractive career for them. We have recently been through a challenge in our area for a review of the banding of our own domiciliary care workers, and I've had a successful outcome for our domiciliary care staff, and we're currently looking at the rates that we pay the independent sector, because I think it's fair to say that we don't want to get into a situation where we're robbing Peter to pay Paul. We want to have some sort of fairness across the sectors, and we want to get to a place where we can stabilise the workforce. And we have got priorities where we have particular clients who need help quicker than some others. For example, somebody who's palliative for end of life, we want to try and mobilise a response as quickly as possible. Somebody who needs to be discharged from hospital to allow us to have the turnover within our hospitals, there are some priority groups that we make sure get our number one attention. But overall, it is a struggle for us, and there are people who are waiting on care, and there are people who have care but need an increase in that care. We have a fairly active approach to how we do that, and we have an ongoing monthly recruitment where we are trying to attract staff into domiciliary care, and we're also working in partnership with the independent sector, because we want to try and work with them and allow them to attract staff in and to make the service as high quality as it can be. So it is an issue for us, it is one we're struggling, but it is one that has our utmost attention. What we're doing regionally now is working across Northern Ireland, looking at what should domiciliary care look like, not just in Southern area, but what should it look like Northern Ireland-wide, and how do we get a model for Northern Ireland that isn't just about going in and doing something for somebody, but working with people and working in a much more quality model of achieving outcomes and achieving independence, and that's our next stage of our journey.
Just another point in relation to Brexit and the nursing element of things, do you see that as a big challenge potentially, or what sort of impact do you think that's likely to make?
Yeah, we had a presentation last week from the Department of Health as part of our sort of two-way developments, and 4 out of 5 of their priority issues would be making sure we have thought through in advance the workforce issues. And at the minute, we're all, I suppose, grappling with what the reality of it will be, but it certainly is 5 of the priorities, as I say, are workforce-related, so it will be something that we'll be actively working with the department on.
Okay, Councillor McAteer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And again, thank you for your presentation, Shane, Melanie and company. Certainly it was encouraging to see certainly recently the 2 appointments in the cardiology section of the ACL Hospital, and positive. But bringing back a couple of points just what I've been looking at over the last while, and it's about the target threshold and the targets been achieved in terms of, one example is planned operations. And, you know, I see here that... you know, why is it only 55% for planned operations if we're waiting for less than 13 weeks? So why is the threshold set so low? And even with the threshold set so low, we can only manage 42.4%. Admittedly, in the figures, it is higher than, I think, the average. But, you know, why do you set the threshold so low? And in cancer care, it's very disturbing to see that, you know, that for an urgent referral, for treatment within 62 days, the Western Trust can achieve 89.1%, and we can only achieve 75%, albeit again the average is 66%. But it's quite disturbing when you see those discrepancies there. And so I'm trying to get the reason for, first of all, the 55%. Why does the West compare so well? What's our problem over here? The other issue, I'm a great fan of this acute care at home service. I visited Lurgan Hospital at one stage and saw it rolled out there. But you did talk there about liaising with the GPs. I'm told that a lot of the GPs don't actually and haven't been made aware of that facility. And that facility keeps people out of hospital. That facility saves lives because the older people don't pick up the infection from hospitals and frees up beds for other issues. So therefore you've got, as you all know well, you know, a better outcome for family, patient, everybody. So what, you know, and I tried to do a bit of publicity around it, but was rebuffed. I didn't want to let anybody know for some reason or about it. But was that, in all honesty, is it the fact that you haven't got it all rolled out yet? But I was a wee bit disturbed to hear that the GPs in the area aren't taking it up. Is it because you're not promoting it well enough? Do they not know? So can you give me some sort of an explanation of that? Thank you.
I can take the elective care one in terms of waiting list. First of all, the target, the 55% target, is set by government. It's not set, the trust doesn't set that target itself.
It's by which government?
By the Department of Health. Except for the Department of Health.
In the North?
In the North, yeah. I think what's really important about elective care is that our performance in elective care is a direct result of the capacity we have and the demand that's coming through the front door. So in other words, you know, every year more and more people want something and our capacity has not been increasing, so we've not been bringing in new surgeons and doctors, etc. So with our fixed capacity against the amount of demand that's growing, that's the performance that we have. And if we ask the question, why is there a difference in a different trust? Because they'll have a different capacity, they'll have a different number of doctors, or they'll have a different theatre layout, or a different number of things that they do. So it depends, it's a perfect relationship between how much demand comes through the door and how much capacity in terms of doctors, nurses, theatre space, etc. that we have. Now, a couple of years ago, that figure was much better than it is now, because a lot of the time, a couple of years ago, we had a lot of independent sector providers that we would have used as well as our own capacity. In other words, we would have purchased from private companies additional elective care, additional theatres, etc., which we haven't been doing, we the health service haven't been doing in the last 2 to 3 years, because the resources wise, we wouldn't have had the money. And certainly, I mean, when I was just working with Rushing a few years ago, we'd have spent a lot of money on the independent sector to try and increase the amount of capacity we had to try and meet the demand that was coming through the door. So a lot of the focus moving forward has to be, is can we be as good as we can be, but can we also increase capacity? And the last couple of years, with the resources that we've had, we have not increased capacity. I mean, it's the reality of the budget that we have not increased capacity. And therefore, that fixed capacity is just getting busier and busier and busier, and we are therefore not able to meet the 13-week target, the 26-week target, the 9-week target, depending on which area you are looking at. So the only way through this is twofold. One is to try and get better at what we do, and secondly then is to increase capacity. Can we increase the amount of people that we have doing this kind of work? And at the moment there is not the resources for that. The £100 million reform money this year, £30 million of that is going towards elective care, and that's a good thing, so it will in fact increase our performance, but it will not be enough to bring us to the 13-week target.
Okay, Councillor McAtee, if I could just add a wee bit to that in terms of acute care at home. I think there's probably a range of reasons, if I'm being honest with you, as to where we currently are now. Firstly, I mentioned the recruitment issues that we struggled with, and what we didn't want to do is we didn't want to say this is now rolling out across Newry and Mourne, and then not to have the staff to actually be in a position to receive. So we wanted to make sure we were synchronising our communication, that once we were raising that interest with GPs, that we were in a position to receive. And that has been a wee bit slower than we would have liked, but as I say, we're well on the journey with that. We're stepping up our, what I would call our phase two communication in Newry and Mourne area, now that we have stabilised a wee bit, although as I said earlier, we're not completely at full quota of our staff yet, particularly the medical end of it. When you're rolling into an area, you're not just thinking about the clients here in community. There's a lot of our older folk are actually within care homes. So we have to make sure that we have built the infrastructure as well within care homes, and we've been working through that as well. But I think one of the big issues is confidence. When it's new service to an area, and this is what we experience in other areas, until people have experienced it and seen the benefit of acute care at home, and I mean not just families, but actually our GP colleagues, we have to work with them and we have to continue to build that confidence, and that's something that we're on. And I think also the capacity issues that they struggle with within primary care and within GP land sometimes means that it might be easier at times to have somebody admitted into an acute facility or whatever, but we are trying to work through all of those issues. I think also Pathfinder working Daisy Hill having now stabilised gives us a new opportunity, because we have to see acute care at home as something that complements the acute service, not as a threat in any way to the acute service. So I think now that a lot of pieces of those jigsaws have fallen in, we hope to be able to move forward and fortify that communication.
Just on the you talked about recruiting nurses.
Yeah.
I mean, my information coming back is that, you know, the group, your recruitment side of thing maybe perhaps needs to look a bit more flexible. You know, a lot of nurses have left the service because they feel their pin has been threatened because of the pressure that they're under.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it, I'm told, could be alleviated if there was a more sort of flexible approach to the employment, you know, and what they've been facilitated. You know, ours, for example, and the work patterns, and also the ability to be retrained in a hospital environment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's usually reticence, you know, or more an imaginative approach to this, but reading what has been sort of said out there in the community and the profession, and relaying that back into your HR.
Yeah.
You know, because I do believe if you had ever asked the question, how many nurses are there in Northern Ireland registered and aren't, you know, fully active, it could maybe surprise you.
Yeah. I agree totally with you, and I think this is all about a learning issue, and what we've been trying to do is learn from the experiences of nurses either who are in our service or nurses who have left our service as to what some of those reasons are. And we have been working at a higher level of getting work-life balance policies in place,
mm-hmm.
so that for people need flexibility around the home life or whatever, that we can put that in place. I think there also is something around supporting staff and making sure that we have a focus on being genuinely interested in the professional development and working through the quality agenda, the risk, all the bits, as you say, that can actually colour their judgments in some of those decisions. We've just been through a recruitment fair in Southern Area over the past few weeks, and we were very successful in recruiting another batch of nurses. So we're hoping that in the near future that we're going to have at least a partial solution to some of the nursing workforce issues that we've been struggling with. But yes, we're always very keen to learn, and where there are issues, I'm a nurse myself, so I understand what a lot of those issues are. But we need to learn from that and apply it. We'll be very happy to do anything we can to actually turn it around.
Yeah,
okay, thank you,
Councillor
Carr.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Shane Mullaney, for the presentation. And it is very encouraging, I have to say, the direction we're going. But, and I suppose when we look at the numbers, I've seen the numbers of 53,500 visiting our emergency department over the course of 2016, they really are colossal numbers. You know, 150 people every day of every week of the year sounds enormous. One area that has caused me a bit of concern recently with different people making representation to you was where people are readmitted into the system. You know, they've come out of hospital, they've had a relapse, emergency relapse at times, and they're rushed back to hospital, and they go through this same thing of going through AME, taking all the details and going through that very slow process, if you like, you know, that they join in there. And another lady who's been admitted 5 times from Christmas with a recurring problem. emergency situations all the time, they're not people that are using the system, but the fact that they go join that queue again, that waiting list, going through AME, sitting about, giving their details, getting certain tests done, when in effect the system knows what's wrong with these people, that
And it's not that they would fast track anybody over another, but they're emergency situations and they've been brought in. It's the delay in dealing with nurses and updating systems and getting information from systems. And maybe just the question is the systems being improved within the, to allow for that?
Thank you, Councillor. I suppose one of the things we're looking at through the Pathfinder group is a thing called direct assessment units. In other words, instead of people automatically going to the emergency department, if patients are known to the GP and there is a way to directly admit them into the hospital. So to avoid A&E, yeah, it's something we should explore, because you are right. You know, if there are particularly elderly people who we know need to come into hospital, the GP knows they need to come into the hospital, then why do we put them through an accident emergency department? So your point is very well made. So that's one of the things that we're looking at, the direct assessment unit, to see whether we could actually have a slightly different front door to make sure those kind of people can come straight into where they need to be. So it's one of the work streams that we're working on in the new model. Other hospitals have something similar. The difficulty is we know that once an older person is admitted with us, and we know that there is a pathway that it's quite often that people will come back into the hospital system, mostly correctly, because they need help. But can we make it easier for that process? Or even better, can we get them to acute care at home so that they don't have to come anywhere near the hospital? But if they did, then we're trying to look at a direct assessment unit, and we'll be working through that the next couple of weeks and months, because we believe we could do that in Daisy Health.
Okay. Thank you. Because they used to, you know. Yeah. Doctor's referral a few years ago would have put you straight into a bed in the hospital.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, councillors, and with no one else indicating there, so we're going to move straight on to Ruth. Thank you for your patience, Ruth, who is going to take care of the presentation from the ambulance service. So, Ruth, have you anything you would like to discuss at this stage, or respond to the questions that were put towards yourself?
Okay, well, thank you very much for the invite, Chair, and good evening, councillors. In relation to some of the questions, it was quite short notice, so the information department didn't have a response to all the questions, but they will follow up on that. It may be useful just to refresh yourselves on the categories of ambulance calls. There's the category A, life-threatening calls, which are responded to within 8 minutes or as close to that as possible. And category B are serious and potentially life-threatening, but in their 21 minutes. And then the category C calls, there are two types of those. One are the healthcare professional category C calls, which are the old, what we call the GP urgent calls, where a GP goes out to visit a patient and puts a time limit on the call. And that's a category C, 1 to 4 hours normally is put on that type of call, depending on the patient's condition, obviously. And then other category C calls would be up to, responded to up to an hour, and they would be from members of the public, which would have their call categorised lower in relation to the information given. So that might be someone who had a fall several days ago and, you know, still had a sore ankle. That would have a lower category or a lower priority than, say, a chest pain call. So that's how we categorise the calls coming into the control room. And I'm not sure if you have the information to hand that was supplied. Do the councillors have that?
It would have been on their minute pads.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Okay, well, just some of the information in relation to that. We don't generate reports normally for the super councils. Now, they were on local commissioning groups before, so the area that I have responsibility for has the same footprint as the South Eastern Trust, but I have a colleague who has responsibility for the Southern Trust. So this council then straddles both those areas, but the information department have provided a report from April 17 through to March 18 for Newry and Mourne, and it gives a breakdown of the categories, the 8-minute, the 21, and the 1-4, and also the R. Unfortunately, the category A is not great in relation to our target. It's currently sitting at 35.6% in the 8 minutes. Overall, regionally, that sits at 45%, although the 21-minute target is sitting at 60%. So we have, like Rustin and Shane also mentioned, huge challenges in relation to demand outstrips the resources we have currently available to us. So that's a challenge for the ambulance service, and we're currently looking at modernisation and again with the transformation money, and that there is money to be allocated to the ambulance service to increase our workforce and put in a new response model into the control room. So that work is all ongoing at the minute. As you can appreciate, and as the lady from COT mentioned, you know, there is a lead-in time for training paramedics, so this won't be done overnight. It will be on a 3-year program, probably, to bring these extra resources in, and they'll be across paramedics, technicians, and our ACA tier, which is the minibus tier and the support tier to the accident emergency tier, but that will take time. So that's on a 3-year programme. The trolley weights, of course, I think I've mentioned these on a previous visit to the council, can be quite challenging for us, especially over the winter pressures. And we're working very closely with the South Eastern Trust to address those issues. And someone has been appointed now by the board to have a fresh look at what we can do differently in relation to the trolley weights, and obviously free up the ambulances to attend the next set of calls. So that's really where we are with that. And that sort of answers some of the questions. I think there's a couple that still will be responded to over time over the next few days. But if there's any specific questions that you may have, I'm happy to try and answer.
Okay, Councillor Traynor.
Thank you very much, Chair. You know, first of all, I have to say, you know, the work that he's doing in the NIAS is brilliant. You know, he's our credit. You know, the staff are our credit. Now, the unfortunate thing I have to point out is that we're looking at 35.6% for Category A for this year. If we go back to 2016-2017, it was 43.3%. You know, that's a big drop. That is a very big drop. And I would say, would that not kind of give an idea then, an indication that this is something that we need to seriously look at, that, you know, that needs to be seriously tackled? And I know that obviously earlier on we're talking about transformation of services and how much money is being, you know, put into different areas. Is this not an area then that we have to, you know, seriously look at and say, you know what, we need to ring fence certain monies for ambulatory care and for the different provisions associated with that? The other question then, just on the back of that drop, is with regards to ambulances, for instance, when they travel from one area to another. So for example, where you have a bypass in place at the Down, where ambulances have to go from outside of Down, sort of the Down district area, or the old Down district area, and have to move up to McDonald, would it be correct in saying that those ambulances in that area can be called on to then service the greater Belfast area? Would that then impact on these times? And if so, is there any way, and I'm not saying that I don't want to save people in Belfast, because that could very easily come up. I want everyone to have the same sort of equality occur, you know, but I suppose whenever you take an ambulance from this area, which already is understaffed, and has, you know, a very, not minimal, because I'm really not here to say this. I want to see exactly how we can overcome these issues. But whenever you come to this sort of an area where there is few and far between for ambulances, you have few staff, whenever a vehicle is taken out along with the paramedic team with it, then that leaves this area in a bit of a conundrum. As you can see, it's evident here. We're being left with a bit of a conundrum where you're talking about people waiting in rural areas for maybe 4 hours then. you know, who are quite serious.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm wondering, I know you're saying it's a 3-year plan. Is there anything in place at the minute to try and alleviate this and to try and stop this downward spiral? Because at the minute, it just looks like we're on a spiral. So I'm wondering, is there anything tangible at the minute that we have or that is being worked on behind closed doors? Because I know that not everything will be right in the public eye. You know, I know that there'll be certain things, people will talk about different things. One thing I've heard of, obviously, is, you know, how moving things from certain categories is one of the things I've heard. You know, are these options that are being looked at? And if so, you know, will they be coming out? Will there be consultations on these? Will people be able to see exactly what's happening with that sort of transformation? Sorry, I know that's
okay.
A lot about waiting for a question. Sorry about that, Sharon. Sorry about that. Yes.
Well, if you would like to take it, Shane.
For those of you who don't know, I used to be the chief executive of the ambulance service up until 5 weeks ago. So, your point you make is absolutely correct. The classification of the calls means that about 30% of the current call load is classified as a Category A life-saving call. And if I can explain to you, there's a bit you talk about in terms of getting the ambulance back to the rural environment. What would happen is an ambulance would find its way, pick someone up who's a genuine Category A call, bring them to the Ulster or bring them to the Royal, and then as soon as that paramedic makes himself available to get an on-call, he or she will get the next Category A call without fail. And it's like a vortex. You can't get away from Belfast. You just get sucked in continuously. What we do know is that 30% of the Category A calls actually is an incorrect amount of Category A calls. Lots of evidence now is showing that actually there's only really about 6 or 7% of calls are genuinely life-threatening. There's a huge evidence base for that at the moment, primarily in England, called the Ambulance Response Programme. So what that means is if it's only 6 or 7%, then the probability of being caught in the vortex getting out of Belfast is considerably lower, because actually you're not actually responding to all. So you have a much better chance of getting out of Belfast and getting back to the rural community if we are genuinely answering genuine red calls. And that's the piece of work that's been going on in the background. And I mean, I have been out now for about 6 weeks, but we have been working with the Department of Health. We will consult, I mean, the Ambulance Service will consult on this model change. What it will allow people to do is it will free up the resource for those that are genuinely life-threatening, whilst without resource, maybe making the rest wait slightly longer, which we don't like, but at least it would get to the genuine red. But running alongside that, there's a bid with the Department of Health to bridge the difference. So in other words, if you model up what it would take to get every Category 1 call, which we now call red, and every 2 and every 3 and every 4 within the timeline, what would it take? And it is very clear that number is at least 300 more staff tonight, at least 300 more staff across Northern Ireland. I think it's actually 333, if I remember correctly. So alongside the model change, there is absolutely a gap in the capacity that the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service has. Because that 330 is only on a base of 1,100. You're talking about moving out an organisation of 1,100 people to well over 1,450 people. So it's a combination of model change to make sure to get the sickest quickest, as well as then the resourcing that's required. And part of that resourcing will be through the modernisation money we described earlier. I'm not close enough to it, Ruth, so I don't know whether that money is available just at this moment in time. That was the intention, was to go through the modernisation resourcing. But it does take 3 years to train a paramedic. So it's not as if suddenly someone will appear. I mean, you know, you could have some of our technicians become paramedic in a year and back to the technicians' roles, but it's not as if someone gave Ruth and her team, you know, £10 million tomorrow. You can't magic them, but you can do stuff over the next 1 to 2 to 3 years to try and increase that capacity.
Yeah, and just really to follow up on that, we are starting a program of recruitment. That money, I think, to all intents and purposes, the noises we're getting is positive, and hopefully that will come to fruition very, very soon. There is some baseline gaps at the minute, so what we're going to focus on over the summer now is to do the recruitment on those three levels, paramedics, technicians and ACAs, to bring us up to the baseline position moving forward into our new model of the 333. So
hopefully that will help alleviate some of the problems. Again, the turnaround work is always useful in freeing up resources to get back to the area. Just on that point that Shane made, and crews will automatically get, they will respond to the closest life-threatening call, whether they happen to be at the Royal, the Ulster, or wherever, and the call closest to wherever they are. But the control room also actively move vacant crews into the gap. So if two crews from Downpatrick or Newry are making their way up to Belfast or whatever, if control have the availability, they will move, you know, rapid response cars or ambulances that are free into the gaps to try and even out the pressure, you know, that there is a response there. Unfortunately, there are occasions where demand exceeds the resources available. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. Pete?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I suppose that sort of was the same point I was going to hit on there. I was going to ask about, it is geography. If they go to the hospital and drop a patient off and they respond to the next category A call, that is the closest category A call. And we can say that, you know, other ambulance crews are then dispatched to plug the gaps, but the gaps are where they're located in the first place. And that doesn't help. You know, it's still beating the same drum about the last time the ambulance crew had come here, and we talked about in the rural area about not having the ambulance service. You know, we can look at this category A life threatening of 8 minutes, 21 minutes. All our calls are category C, whether it's category A or not. You know, it's 2 hours and 2 hours plus. And I think, you know, even at 35.6% success rate in category A, as low as it is and as much as you want to get it up, it is definitely not reflective across the area, because there's 0%. There is not a single chance of you getting an ambulance into South Armagh in 8 minutes. So when we hear money coming in from the conference to pay arrangement, you know, if we say, you know, money to increase the workforce, you increase it by 330, or I think you said that a new response model put into the control room, and if that's to try and alleviate some of the pressure from category A calls that aren't category A calls, I understand that. But it still doesn't help the residents that I represent in South Armagh. You could put on another 1,100 people, but if you don't base them geographically close to us, then it's you know, it's a waste of time for us, because we're not going to get an ambulance in less than 2 hours in life-threatening calls. That's why when I asked at CAWT presentation earlier on, and European money was for improving the health in the border communities, and that's what that organisation works for. I'm sure the Interreg funding that they had got has that stipulation on it, in order to increase, using cross-border initiatives, that rural communities that are disadvantaged because of the border are disadvantaged, and that's where the five programs come. And that's why it's very, very, and the reason why I'm asking this question is to cross it over from what one of the speakers there said. The reason why I'm disappointed when I pressed them the question is that it is mainly for the Monaghan area, and it may go across Armagh. Well, there is little or no chance of it servicing the people in Armagh. And I'm sure, you know, to be totally cynical, it's nearly a tick box. Yes, we can service Armagh, but two paramedics in Monaghan will not be able to service the Armagh area. So the last meeting that I had raised the question, and other councillors from South Armagh also raised the question, of going away, and I think it was Shane yourself at the last meeting, of talking about identifying hubs, geographical, and coming back and going forward with that project of where these hubs should be. Now, from CAWT earlier on, they had said that they selected the hub of Monaghan based on the ambulance service yourselves identifying these hubs. Now, how a hub in Monaghan for that project was identified with the ambulance crew, and it can't be equidistant between, say, Daisy Hill and Monaghan Cavan Hospital in the middle, so that the people are so far away from both them hospitals can't be serviced. Why it has to be at one polar opposite or the other is beyond me. So where are we? Are we going to be banging the drum for the next 10, 15 years about these hubs? Because we can put all the money we want in, we can change the model to reduce the category of calls, we can put all the staff in, but if we don't put them in the right geographic places, we're wasting our time for the rural community. So I'm disappointed that the hub is in Monaghan. I'm disappointed that that's coming from the feedback of the ambulance service. And why is it not equidistant between the two hospitals?
I mean, in terms of the court presentation earlier, I wouldn't say what the community paramedic service through court is doing is creating a hub for paramedics. The paramedic community paramedic process is one that's connected to GPs, is limited in its service. So I would not say that's where National Ambulance Service has created a hub. In terms of where Northern Ireland Ambulance Service is, we went away, we modelled where our centre should be and where our hub should be, and that's all part of that process that we're now in, well, not personally, but the Ambulance Service is in the middle of, with the Department of Health looking at the 333, the new model, and where we should base our ambulances. And so that process is ongoing. I wouldn't say in any way that was connected with the conversation or discussion of the court. So, I mean, I think they're two separate things. NIAS has to do the right thing for Northern Ireland and make sure there is a plan of where ambulances will be, including the additional resources. And I know that's what Brian, as Director of Operations, is doing, is looking across Northern Ireland and where should we put ambulances to make sure we can be within the 8 minutes, 21 minutes, 60 minutes, depending on what the model is. So work is underway on that. But
I remember, Councillor, many years ago, actually, and I think the conversation was with Muireann Mourne Council at the time, and I'm not sure if it was yourself, but someone had mentioned just actually what you're talking about the rural and the Cross MacLean. And we, at that time, actually, I was the area manager in the Southern Trust, or the Southern Division, and we got a deployment point at Cross MacLean Fire Station and Warren Point Fire Station. And really, for us, we have to put our resources where the majority of the calls are. So where the greatest demand is, where we're going to hit most calls, is where ambulance stations are, and then deployment points are extensions of those. The difficulty with that is, again, is demand. If we have two ambulances in Newry and a car, we should send one to Cross MacLean and one to Warren Point. But unfortunately, now, what tends to happen is all three resources are out in calls. So we don't have anyone to send out to those deployment points. But in general terms, under the new model, it will still focus on areas of high population and high density, and then smaller deployment points further out as extensions to that. But, I mean, it just is dependent on the demand patterns at the time, but we tried to address that because you were absolutely right at that time, and that was many years ago. The 8-minute response time to that area was 0%. And I can't speak for now because I don't have the figures with me, but lower volume of calls is always more difficult for us to achieve the target.
You know, people that say, well, you've got a first responder team in South Armagh, and that sort of building the whole topic now. And to hear from you know the money in the conference today, but it's trying to focus on the areas where we're big on the or if I can category A call and somebody in my family may have an ambulance and yet you're at the exam is going to the hospital drops off, which all the closest category A call. It's not good enough. We need to look at the bigger market. It's not West Australia. It's, you know, we can get an hour and a half in and around the whole area. You know, should we wait 4 hours for an ambulance category A call? Like, fully accept that if we can get the number of category A calls ahead, that's a good way going forward. But we need to be looking close up with all our communities, and we need to be looking at collaboration across the board. And that 280 million needs to be closer to the people that we serve. And if NAS had access to lobby role in that, and that's all we can do, from the insurance from the rooftops for that. But going forward, we need a more collaboration. It's going to be the same thing going on again, year on year on year. And it's not that we pay in the system as much as every year, and we should be getting back.
Okay, Councillor Gordon, you've made your point. Do you want to come in and respond to that and perhaps take up the lobby? And I think it's a valid point. Does anyone want to come in to respond to that?
I mean, I'm happy, obviously, to respond to that. I think your point is well made. The ambulances will travel across borders. The National Ambulance Service will travel across to the north, and our own crews have travelled across to the south around as well. But the point is well made. Have we developed a partnership with the National Ambulance Service in that geography to serve your community? I don't believe we have, and I'm more than happy to speak with Michael, who's the new chief executive, and talk, because it's a fair point. I mean, at the end of the day, have we invested in the National Ambulance Service to outreach into our patch? I don't believe we have. So, you know, more than happy to explore that and ask Michael, who's the new chief executive, to explore that.
Yeah, the only thing I would be aware of is we have like a reciprocal agreement with, so if they ring our control room and say we have a call or a serious RTC we need assistance with, if we have resources available, we'll certainly help them and vice versa. But that's a more general thing than what you're actually talking about. And I'm not really familiar with the programme that the girls were talking about, except in Castledurg. And I only know it exists. I'm not involved in it. But it would be my understanding that those paramedics, although they do have a car and respond to calls, I think the majority of their time is with the GP, learning how to assess and treat people, you know, in the surgery and how to learn how to assess and that type of thing, rather than responding as an RRV paramedic. So it's a different type of program at the minute, but it is only a pilot.
Okay. Pete, right, and Pete, there is going to be another meeting, and whenever you go to the workshop, you know, put down on paper exactly what it is so we, you know, we can have a thorough response and a more thorough conversation about it at that point in time. Councillor Sharvin.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just picking up on the categories around Category A and volume, clearly the lack of a available 24/7 A&E at the Down is disadvantaging the area through the availability of ambulances being put into that vacuum of Belfast and having to travel up to the Ulster. So if 24/7 A&E at the Down was available, then those ambulances would actually remain within our own area and not be brought into the vacuum of Belfast. So that's a major thing that highlights the ambulance coverage in our area, and that's one thing of promoting why restoring the A&E 24/7 at the Down is so important. A couple of other things is around the increase of workforce that you mentioned, the baseline. How many does that mean locally within the South Eastern Trust? You know, the 333 has been mentioned by Shane. Obviously isn't 333 in the South Eastern no, Trust, no. Which would be great if it was. So how many of that
might job be easy.
Yeah, how many of that is actually going to benefit us locally here? Also confirming the number of ambulances in the area of the Down. You know, how many ambulances would be here on a Saturday night? Obviously it's going to be very few because they're in Belfast by the sounds of it. Replacement vehicles, you know, how many's off the road, how many is being maintained, and how quickly is that being turned around? And then the last thing is agency staff. I'm sure from the talking of 3 years training up a paramedic, obviously if we had 10 million is the figure that was used, it's not going to resolve the issue. So how many agency staff are we currently very reliant on in bringing that level of workforce up to the required workforce?
Well, I think I'll go from the back.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Agency staff, actually, we don't have any frontline agency staff. We do have a bank staff where people who choose to either work on a bank rather than a full contract have the ability to do that. We also have all the flexible working arrangements available for staff, part-time, term-time, all those types of things as well. In relation to resources in Downpatrick, there are 2 ambulances 24 hours a day, and there are 2 spare vehicles there. So in the event that the day shift is still out, there are 2 vehicles there for the night shift. There's also a resource base in Newcastle 24/7. There's a car in Downpatrick which operates from 0800 to midnight. So that it's one car, but it's 2 shifts. There's also a 24/7 vehicle in Ballinhinch. So those 3 stations are, you know, work closely together. So if Downpatrick's out, they move around to fill the gaps. The same Newry is 2 vehicles 24/7, also 2 cars there, I think. And each station has, again, a spare vehicle for breakdowns, whatever, and for the availability of changeover times. Sorry, I missed the first.
So the increase of workforce, how many locally?
I'm not sure the number off the top of my head, but I mean, I can get that for you. But I mean, it will be a share of the pot. So there are 5 divisions, so it's roughly, you know, a share of that equally.
And just one that you missed there, sorry, was the replacement vehicles, those that are off road due to breakdowns, maintenance. Would there always, so in your response to the other, where there's 2 vehicles and 2 spares, would there always be that 4 in the Downpatrick area, or would you sometimes experience that there may be only 3 because one is off the road?
Yeah, well, actually, there's one crash there not that long ago, so it's actually away for repair. So the spare in Newcastle or Ballinhinch would support Downpatrick then. We just move them around as and when we need them. But there's not, you know, there's not a massive amount of spare capacity, but, and we would, you know, if we have a difficulty with a reduction, we borrow from our colleagues and other divisions. So.
And one other thing, sorry, is I'm not sure if your length of service with the ambulance service, but from the time that you started to now, why do you think there is a struggle?
Oh, demand has gone through the roof, absolutely.
Right, thank
you. And I think public expectation as well. Is a lot higher, and I have 32 years service.
Okay.
I tell everyone I started when I was 12.
Councillor, sorry.
Could I just respond to one point you made, Councillor Sharvin? I think it is, you know, be important for me and on behalf of the Trust to respond to you, to express a view that you feel there's a need for a 24/7 consultant-led emergency department at the Down Hospital, and that would not be the view of the South Eastern Trust. And that we can confirm there's absolutely no plans to reinstate a 24/7 emergency department at the Down. We do not feel it would be the right thing to do. We do not feel that it would. We feel that the current model is safer and more sustainable than the model that was there in previous years, and that the current model is working well, and we have plans to expand that on that basis. But I think it's very important in terms of the message that we're all sending out to the public, the reasons why we do not feel it would be appropriate to try and reinstate a 24/7 consultant-led emergency department within the Down Hospital, and be very happy to meet with you at any time to discuss through the clinical reasons for that.
Okay. Well, Councillor
Sharvan, we're not going to solve that tonight, but again, I have to say to all councillors, the reason that it's very important that we go to the committee meetings is so that questions that we want very specific answers for can be forwarded to the Trust. That's the whole key in keeping these things, you know, so we, at these meetings, people have the answers to hand where they can have a conversation on them. So again, just I think we're just going to park that. If you want to raise it again at the next meeting, absolutely. Councillor Harvey.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. You have two ambulances 24 hours a day in a car and down Padley. Can you give us a rough guide to the response times in the south eastern area, please?
I don't believe, let me see if she gave me it. She did give a breakdown from April to March, but that was Newry, Morningdown, the two trucked areas. So I don't have that. And the other one actually is an older one, which took you back to 2013-14, which wasn't... it's not relevant, obviously, now. Although the Category A breakdown then was 52.2 in the down. But I have no idea what that is.
It's quite an old figure, really.
Yeah, it
would have no relevance to today.
Absolutely no relevance now. Okay. And again, I mean, I think the information department are going to supply information in relation to postcode areas for the council, so that might be useful for you.
Yeah, I think that was something that we had asked through the workshops, that we would maybe be able to get a breakdown in terms of postcode. Okay, councillors, just for everyone's information, the next health committee meeting will be on the 22nd of October, and as per usual, there will be the workshops. The working groups will be meeting together probably around the start of September. So anyone that has any issues that they want very specific answers to, and you know, rather than people having to come back to us or, you know, prolong the answers, could everybody just keep an eye out for them in their diary so that they have those questions and queries forwarded to the appropriate people. Just on behalf of myself, because when you come back, I will be sitting down there, thank God. And so, I mean, it was great that, I know it was a big ask to pull this together. I know this doesn't happen in any other council where we have such senior staff from all of the trusts, including the Ambulance Trust. So I think, although we have a long way to go, I think that we have created good working relationships, and certainly the presentations to the working groups have been very informative, and hopefully they will continue. So thank you very much for your time. Okay, thank you. Newry Town Hall. I will be doing a thing with the Southern Area Trust regarding donor organ donation and the promotion of it, and all community groups, sporting associations, schools will get an invite, and businesses, so everyone would be encouraged to attend.